What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for kicking off your week with us. This is your Monday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrico99 and also at EthosFantasyBB. That's where you get all of our new content, whether it's podcasts, articles, polls, everything on the baseball side gets shared out or posted directly from that page. So make sure you guys are giving it a follow. And if you're not somebody who is on social media, sportsethos.com will get you all that same great work right from the source. Guys, we're going to be talking about some of the big news and notes from yesterday's games and then getting into the most added and dropped players of the day. Pretty standard stuff for us, but I do want to deviate a little bit here just off the top because I can be guilty of this myself. Sometimes I don't listen to an entire podcast. I'll listen to the first half an hour on a drive home or something, and then you know, I'll never get back to finishing up the episode because a new show will be released or there'll be different stuff that I'm doing. So sometimes, you know, podcasts that I really love and listen to regularly will say things that I never hear just because I'm so busy. So I do want to get a couple of important notes off right off the top here. Talk about two players that I think are absolute priority adds before we get into the rest of the news. Zach Littell, if you are in a weekly lineup league, is an absolute must-roster player right now. He's only 48% rostered on Yahoo. I don't know how it's so low. 18 on ESPN. He has one of the more appealing two-start weeks you're going to see all season versus Detroit and then at the White Sox later this week. The first start is tonight at about 7 p.m. Eastern. The show will be releasing at about 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. You know, I had a busy morning. I would have liked to get the show out earlier, but if you guys are listening to this now and Zach Littell is still sitting on your waiver wire, I think he's an absolute must-roster player. He's jumped up 7% from last week, but he's still available. And not to mention, starting pitcher and relief pitcher eligibility is really sweet. And this isn't even just matchup-based either. He's got a 2.14 ERA. He's been pretty damn solid through his first few starts of the season as well. The matchups, you know, at this point, I'd play anybody with that kind of two-start week, but especially considering how well Littell has pitched, you know, and he's going to be pitching for the Rays, who are going to be favored to win both of those games. Like, it's a really, really smart pickup if you're still able to get Littell. I wasn't able to get him in a lot of my leagues. I do have a couple of shares already, and I'll be happily starting him where I have him this week. And I also want to mention Kirby Yates. My God, what a week Kirby Yates just had. You know, I picked him up in my home league last weekend thinking, okay, I had Jose Leclerc, so I needed to get rid of him anyway. Picked up Kirby Yates. We got three saves and a victory. Just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful week. Did not allow an earned run, 0.4 whip. He's only up at 69% on Yahoo. He was at 64% last night. He's jumped up. He's going to keep jumping up because he is the closer in Texas. That's obviously a very good team. There's going to be a lot of opportunities for saves. Good amount of wins probably you'll get from him as well, and decent strikeouts to go along with it. Kirby Yates, I think, is probably the highest priority pickup in terms of relievers. I know that there's a lot of talk about the revolving door in Milwaukee all the time. Is it Piams? Is it Uribe? Is it this guy? Is it that guy? I don't care about Milwaukee's relief pitcher situation anymore. It's just bullshit. It's just total bullshit for us fantasy managers, especially in 10-team leagues. I think that you're going to be chasing, you're going to be chasing your tail with that one, essentially. It's going to be very hard to stay ahead of the curve to see who's getting saves. If you're still looking for saves, and I know it's, you know, most leagues have probably picked him up already, but 69%? You know, he's still sitting out there in a good chunk of leagues, and I think Kirby Yates is probably the most attractive pickup that you guys can find right now. He was a top five player last week. It's obviously not going to be that good every single week, but damn, he's doing a lot for you right now. He is definitely worthy of a roster spot in every format, even 8-team leagues. I think Kirby Yates should just be rostered across the board at this point. Let's talk about the news and notes from yesterday, though. I just did want to get those two off the top. Who knows? If I say it right at the end, maybe you guys won't listen to it. I don't know. I just know that there's sometimes where I do end up leaving 20 minutes of a show unheard, and I wanted to get the most important things off right at the top. But let's start breaking down some of yesterday's top performers. And let's start with Casey Mize. He's been excellent in his return to the majors this year. He's got his ERA down to 2.95 after yesterday. Six innings, shutout ball. He only had four strikeouts, walked three batters. So it wasn't like a sparkling outing, but it was still six innings of shutout ball, 29% CSW, 10% swinging strike rate. He's done enough to earn an ad in, I think, pretty much every single league. Casey Mize is worth it. Only 27% on Yahoo. He does face the Royals this week, which I still don't really know how I feel about the Royals. They are overperforming. They're not going to be, you know, this strong offensively all season. Do I really want to stream against them right now? I think that the answer is kind of a case-by-case situation, but generally speaking, like, the Royals are not going to be this good all year. I think you can stream against them, and Casey Mize, I think, is a decent option for you there. A lot of people have talked about the lack of strikeouts with Casey Mize. That's always been the case with him. He's never been a guy who is going to be, you know, striking out double-digit batters. He's always been like a sub-20% guy with a high ground ball rate. That's been his calling card, is he generates a lot of ground balls, and he also pitches in a very, very friendly park in Detroit. I think there's a good chance we see him carry 12-team value this year. That would be my guess. It's tricky. It's really tricky, and a lot of rest-of-season questions. You don't really know what things are going to look like in 3 or 4 months, but as of right now, Casey Mize has been really, really good. 3 consecutive excellent starts. The first one against the Mets was a little bit shaky, but the last 3 have been really good. And it's not like he's facing bird opponents either. Pittsburgh is whatever, but Texas and Minnesota, not terrible teams. I know Minnesota's struggling right now, but generally speaking, like, if he had done this against Oakland and Miami, it would be a little bit different for me. I think there are some legit changes here. With Casey Mize, he does seem to be better than when we last saw him, and it's been a couple of years. He didn't pitch at all in the majors last season. But I do think that he is somebody at this point that is worth adding. Even if you don't want to start him next week against Kansas City, or this week against Kansas City, you know, I'm not going to hold that against you. It's a toss-up. It's not like he's a must-start. But I think he does deserve to be added in most cases at this point. Let's talk about Mitchell Parker. I think I'm the high man in the industry on Mitchell Parker. I didn't think I would be at this point last week, because I barely knew his name at this point last week, but he's come up and he has dominated the Astros and the Dodgers lineups to start his career. I know the Astros are not, you know, classic Astros right now, and honestly neither are the Dodgers, but there's no way you can tell me that's not incredibly impressive to go 2-for-2 in your first couple starts, victories in both of them. And when you look below the surface, because sometimes even with just a 1 or 2 start sample size, you can look at some numbers below the surface and think, okay, he didn't allow an earned run, but the expected numbers are all over the place, and the walks are high, and the strikeouts are low. Sometimes you can even see just from very small sample sizes. We should never read too much into a small sample size, but you can start to see little things. With the small sample size of Mitchell Parker, yes, he has not walked a batter, but he's never been a guy who has massive, massive walks. There was a couple of years in the minors where it did pop up over 10%, and there was a couple of years, I should say, where it was actually pretty rough. Like 2022 was a pretty rough year in terms of command. Generally speaking, I think he's about an 8 to 9% walk rate guy. Nothing crazy, but he has not walked a batter through his first 12 innings. That's obviously very good. 12 strikeouts through his first 12 innings is really solid stuff as well, and also the fact that he's only allowed the 2 earned runs. Now, I mentioned those estimators, ERA estimators, they're actually really good. 150 is the actual ERA, 121 FIP, 246 XFIP, 242 XERA, and a 254 Sierra. Those all just essentially, if you're unfamiliar with them, try and remove the things the pitcher can't control from the equation and essentially just try and tell you the quality of the pitches he's throwing without worrying about the defense or the ballpark or the temperature that day. So, in short, Mitchell Parker has been incredibly impressive. I don't see Washington getting rid of him in the rotation, because who the hell else are they going to go to at this point? They're not an awful rotation, but I think that he is definitely going to stick for the time being. And specifically for this next week, he faces the Marlins. So I bid $78 on him in Tout Wars. Nobody else bid even a dollar. I could have, based on where I am in the standings as well, and there are $0 bids in Tout Wars, I could have got him for free. I could have got him for zero. Nobody else even placed a bid on him. And I was looking at different NFBC leagues. I was listening to the RotoWire podcast last night with Jeff Erickson and Scott Jenstad, and they were saying that he was generally going for about 30, 40 bucks, generally speaking, in FAB, but $1,000 out of a $1,000 budget, so 3 or 4%. I went up to about 8% with Mitchell Parker. I think that he looks pretty legit. I don't see a big reason for them to move off of him, and he has an amazing start this week. So, and the rules of Tout Wars as well, you pick up a player for that week, you have to start them that week. So he's in my lineup against the Marlins. Nothing I can do about it, nothing I want to do about it. I think it's going to be a pretty decent situation for him. If you just look at all the different numbers we have available to us, I don't think he's a superstar, but I think that he can be really, really solid, specifically in a 15-team mixer where there's really not that many great options floating around the waiver wire. Like Dalton Varsho got dropped in my Tout Wars league last week, and Derek Van Riper picked him up for like, I don't know, 200 and something. I think it was 200 and something. whenever a player of any kind of value becomes available, there's usually pretty big bids. And that's why, like, after a two-start week where he goes to the Dodgers and the Astros, I was thinking people are going to be all over this guy. Triple-digit bids. I didn't even think I was really going to get him for $78. But I did. I got him unopposed for $78. So I'm kind of thinking to myself, did I miss something here? Is there something like, is he going to get sent down? Is there something in the performance here? It all looks pretty good. Like, the BABIP was pretty low, 226 BABIP, but it's not, anything that I would look at. Oh, like, that's the number. That's it right there. Everything else is good except for the BABIP, which is not, like, an astronomically low BABIP. You see Carlos Rodon having a good start today. His BABIP is, like, 0.83. If you're in the 220, 230 range, it's still low, but it's not like, oh, my God, that's going to fly up. It will go up, but it's not something to fly off the handle about. I think Mitchell Parker is worth an ad for this week. He's up to 12% over on Yahoo. You can find him pretty much everywhere. I don't think he's going to cost you a lot. He might cost you a lot if you're me and you just bid irresponsibly a little bit. But I think that he is worth a pickup. Wherever you're playing against the Marlins, that's a great matchup. If you look at his numbers in AAA last year, 352 FIP, 16% strikeout minus walk. I think it's a really good situation to be picking him up. And I am kind of still just like, what? Why did nobody else bid on him? Why is there nothing else? And there's a chance that maybe I'm just crazy, but I really like Mitchell Parker, and I think he is worth a pickup for this week. Let's talk about Jose Soriano. There's a lot of talk about Parker. Soriano had a second consecutive great outing, and this one came at Great American Ballpark. Six innings pitched, three hits. He did allow three runs, but none of them were earned. So as far as we are concerned as fantasy managers, it's a shout-out performance. Seven strikeouts, three walks, 33% CSW, and a 14.1% swinging strike rate. That's all really good stuff. The three walks, not so much, but everything else pretty damn good. He got off to a rocky start to the first couple outings of the year. It did not look amazing, but he seems to have turned a corner, and he does get those struggling twins that I mentioned earlier this week. So I think can't find my words today. I think Jose Soriano is definitely a guy that you can look into adding for that matchup this week. He's only 5% on Yahoo, starting pitcher, relief pitcher eligible, but we've seen some really good stuff from him over the last couple weeks. I think that strikeout upside is pretty damn legit there. So I would be taking a look at him. If you're in a very shallow league, a 10-teamer, he's probably not anybody you need to be like overexcited about, but I can still get behind picking him up there for that start. That's a really nice matchup. Let's talk about Luis Gil. It's pronounced Luis Gil, G-I-R. It's spelled Luis Gil, but it's pronounced Heel, in case you're curious about who I'm talking about. Been a little shaky so far, generally speaking, but a 2.75 ERA, 1.27 whip from somebody who was essentially free in your draft, so you picked him up. I don't think he was even drafted in most of your leagues. This is a pretty decent early season return. He had a really solid outing yesterday against the Rays. It was 5 2/3, two hits, nine strikeouts with three walks, did not allow a run. 33% CSW and a 14.4% swinging strike rate. I worry about the command. I genuinely do. 17 walks in 19 2/3 innings is going to catch up with you. That's awful. That's an awful number. That being said, most of us are pretty desperate for starting pitchers, and he's having really good run while pitching for a good team. So I think that he should be somebody that you do take a look into adding. Again, there are certain weeks, especially in 15-teamers, where you're going to be more inclined to sit him. I do think that most of the time right now he's going to be making it into your lineup. He has Milwaukee later this week, who does not have Christian Yelich right now. That takes away quite a bit of the thump from that order. So I do think that he is worth starting in that matchup. They're doing well as a team, but I think Luis Gil is still somebody that would generally be a start for me. Depends on your options. A lot of the time I'll say this guy's a start, this guy's a sit. It really does depend on the other options for you. I think that he's generally going to be a start against Milwaukee this week, though. He is interesting. The command is a huge issue, but if he is able to cut down those walks even a little bit, we could be looking at a really, really nice asset here who, again, didn't cost you much of anything. Maybe you paid up in the first week of Fab for him, but, in the Fab League where I did pick him up, I think it was 52 or 53, so like 5%. There's a chance you have something a little bit more there. It's just all really comes back to the command for me with him. Let's talk about Andy Páez. I say it, phonetically because I know there will be some people who say, who's Páez? And we do this all the time with different players. And I'm usually the worst with pronouncing names. But Andy Páez, I believe is how it is pronounced, been off to a really good start, and he hit his first big league homer yesterday. I shouldn't say it's been like a really good – he hasn't hit the ground running necessarily, but he's been pretty solid. He's been playing every day. He scored five runs through his first 18 at-bats. He's got the homer, driven in three runs. It's been pretty solid. I mean, he's playing every day for the Dodgers. That right there is enough for me in most cases to warrant an ad. And he's not been stuck in the 9 hole. It's the 7 or the 8 hole where he's been batting. It doesn't sound like much of a difference. It is a slight difference. Again, it's not like a massive difference, but it's something. He's not stuck in the 9th hole every single day. He's up to 16% on Yahoo. I think that he is worth an ad in 12-team leagues, specifically if you have any kind of expanded outfield. If it's a 3-outfielder league, sometimes it is really hard. Like, I'm having questions today about, like, is Colton Cowser still worth holding on to in 3-outfielder league? Like, it's there's really not a lot of room there for a lot of people. So in that kind of situation, yes, it might be a little bit tricky to add Andy Páez. If you are in anything deeper than a 3-outfielder league or it's a 12-team 3-outfielder, I think that he is somebody that will be worth adding. And a lot of it comes down. I mean, the prospect pedigree is solid enough, but the fact that he's playing every day for the Dodgers, it doesn't really matter who you are. That pretty much everybody in that boat is going to be worth an ad. So go take a look and see if he's out there. The odds are that he is still available in your league. Willy Abreu has been quietly excellent for Boston this year. I haven't heard really anybody talking about him, but a .280 batting average, .390 on base, and a .440 slug. 9 runs, he's hit a homer, stolen 4 bases, and he has driven in 7 runs. I don't think, again, this is going to be something that changes your year drastically, but for the time being, I mean, honestly, I shouldn't sell it short. He's been batting at the top of the order for the Red Sox between the 2 and the 4 slot these last few games. He's producing a lot. Outfield is, depending on your league, sometimes it is a little bit shitty, especially in 15-teamers. And there's a lot of 15-teamers where I'm sure he's available. Only on 6% of rosters. He's been a top 50 player the last 2 weeks. He was a top 20 player last week. Again, it's not going to stick to that extent. But top of the order, you know, doing things right now, good home ballpark. He should be a lot higher than it was 3% rostered last night. It's up to 6% now. He's somebody that you should be taking a look at, I think, in most leagues at this point. And again, a lot of the time when I say somebody is an ad, I think it gets misinterpreted by some people as, like, this is a rest of season play. You're picking this guy up, and now you get 6 months. Like, that's usually not how it works. A lot of the time, these guys are going to be a week or two. Like, Miguel Sano was a really popular ad in NFBC leagues last night. I don't know that anybody's expecting Miguel Sano to be back to, you know, what he did with the Twins a couple times and giving you 30-plus homers. I think they're just hoping for a good couple of weeks, and a lot of the time that's the most you can hope for here. Abreu's giving you good run, top of the order, good lineup, you know, good park. I think there's a lot of reasons to like him, at least in the short term, and potentially maybe this is something that we can get a whole season out of him where it's not, you know, knocking you away. Holy crap, top 50 player, but maybe he's able to produce like a top 200 season, and in that case, like, you take it as an absolute victory for fantasy purposes. He's still available. Pretty much in every league, I would be taking a look to see if he's out there in yours. Let's talk Luis Garcia Jr. for Washington. The junior is important because Luis Garcia, I think there are 3 Luis Garcias in Major League Baseball, so it's good to differentiate between them. He's off to a great under-the-radar type of start to the year. .317 batting average, .348 on base, and a .476 slug. 4 runs scored. He's hit the homer, 5 stolen bases. Second base is fairly weak as a whole. He's a really nice asset in, you know, NFBC leagues. I bid on him in a couple last night. I was not successful because I didn't bid enough. I think I bid about 17 to 25 on him in most leagues, and he was going for about 30 to 50 range. I thought that was a little expensive, but, I mean, decent batting average asset. Last year was 9 homers and 9 steals in only 447 at-bats. He did get sent down in the second half, which does worry me a little bit, but he's already got 5 steals and 63 at-bats. Excuse me, guys. I'm still dealing with that sickness from last week a little bit, so forgive the clearing of the throats here and there. But he's already got 5 steals and 63 at-bats after he had 9 all last season. You got to think he's going to easily beat the stolen bases. Power is not something that's going to be really his thing. You're probably looking at single-digit home runs. Maybe you get to, like, 12 home runs. But I think that he's somebody who is likely to get fairly regular run, middle of a not a great lineup, but an improving lineup. C.J. Abrams looks really good. Jesse Winker looks like a whole new player. I think Luis Garcia, for the time being, is worth an ad, and it could even be something where it ends up being more than just a short-term player. You know, a lot of, like I just said, sometimes it's just 2 weeks or something. Garcia, I don't see there being a hell of a lot of competition for the entire year there. If he falls off, like they've showed us just as recently as last year, that they could potentially send him down or bench him or get him out of the lineup for a while. But right now, while he's doing what he's doing, I think it really does make sense to add him. Like I said, second base is not great. Second base kind of sucks, and there's been a lot of disappointments. We've had Jonathan India not doing well and Bryson Stott. There's a lot of players, Geloff. I got a lot of people asking me about replacements for these kind of players, and I wouldn't be dropping them. But if you are looking to shore up your roster a little bit and add a little bit of depth at the second base position, I think Luis Garcia is probably the best widely available guy you're going to find. Probably. I mean, again, depends on your specific league. But for somebody under 10% rostered, I think that he is right up there with the best of them. All right, let's get into the most added and dropped players of the day now. Let's start off with Bryce Elder. He's been added by nearly 20,000 managers today. He gets a two-start week, or he's scheduled for a two-start week, as he got called up early this morning. He'll start against the Marlins. We knew he was coming up yesterday, so some people might have added him yesterday as well. But he'll get the Marlins today and then Cleveland later in the week. That's a pretty, pretty damn good two-step. I don't think that I'm going to be interested in Bryce Elder simply because I don't think he's a very good pitcher. I mean, the surface stats are pretty decent from last year. It was a 3.81 ERA in AAA so far this year, 3.31 ERA. There's really not a lot of strikeout upside. He doesn't have great enough command to really compensate for the low strikeout rate, and people might point to the 27% strikeout rate in AAA this year. It's been 16 innings. I wouldn't read into that too much. I would default to the massive track record, which is generally 20-ish percent, even in the minor leagues, like as high as maybe 27% a few years back, but that's in the minor leagues. What he's done at the major league level has been an 18.2% strikeout rate with a 9% walk rate. Brutal stuff. Yes, he had a 3.81 ERA last year, but every supporting metric was terrible. His Sierra was 4.81, one of the worst marks in all of baseball. 4.61 expected ERA, 4.49 xFIP. Just really not great stuff. The matchups are appealing enough that in a 15-teamer, he was likely added across the board last night for that two-step. But if you're in a 10-team, 12-team league, and a lot of you guys are daily players, you know, from a lot of the polling I've done, the polling I've done is on Twitter, and there might be a little bit of a disconnect between Twitter and the podcast audience. I think there's a lot of overlap, but there might be some disconnect. Most of you guys play in daily changes league, so it's not like you need to be locking in a guy for the week. You could potentially stream him for tonight, but I think there's a lot of risk here. Like, I would much, much rather take the one Mitchell Parker start than the two Bryce Elder starts. Parker's rostered in 12% of leagues. Elder's gone up to 26%. Why is that exactly? I don't know. I think it's the good team context, the good matchups. The fact that on the surface he was pretty good last year, but like he fell apart down the stretch, man. He, as somebody who had him on a league last year, was watching those starts. It was awful down the stretch. What he did in the second half for you was actually more of a detriment to your team than, the stuff in the first half really helped, but we had in the second half 7 earned, 5 earned, 5 earned, 5 earned, 4 earned, 4 earned, 4 earned, 5 earned, all these walks all over the place. It was really a tough, tough end to the year for Bryce Elder. So I'm not going out of my way to pick him up. If you want to pick him up for the Miami start, there's a decent chance he goes 5 innings, gets 3 strikeouts, gets the win tonight. I just think there's a lot of risk there. It's a short-term kind of add, so again, you're not getting too attached either way. I just don't trust him. I just think that he's not great. The strikeouts aren't great. It's pretty much just the team context here that would make me even a little bit interested. But wins are so volatile anyway. You can't pick up a guy and just say, you're getting wins. You're getting wins because he's on the better team. It doesn't always work like that unless you're pitching against the White Sox. That does seem to work like that this year. But with Bryce Elder, he makes me nervous. He makes me really nervous about putting him in any lineups that are shallower than 15. If you're in a 10-team league, I promise you there are better options out there. Brian De La Cruz is on an absolute heater. He has been fantastic. He is carrying a couple of my teams in the early going. 14 ribbies, 5 homers, and a steal. He's batting .274. He's a pickup wherever you can find him still, and it's going to be kind of tricky as the days progress. He's up 18% just from yesterday all the way up to 47, but 47%, I mean, you're still finding him all over the place. If he is still sitting out there, absolutely, Brian De La Cruz is one of the higher priority outfield adds if he's available in your league. Competitive leagues, likely gone, but if not, then make sure you're taking a look there. Travis d'Arnaud absolutely lit the world on fire the other night with a 3-home-run game, and then he followed that up in Texas. He did start the game in Texas. He had a couple walks, just ended up with 1 at-bat that game. but did hit a home run as well. So we had four home runs over the course of two games from Travis d'Arnaud. He took a seat on Sunday, a well-deserved day of rest. While Sean Murphy is not there, while he's not healthy, d'Arnaud is going to play most of the time, and I think that he is worth a pickup pretty much everywhere. Sean Murphy's most recent update was from yesterday. That his the most recent update on his oblique injury is that he has increased his throwing. He continues to make his way back. I don't see a timetable, though. Like, they haven't said 2 weeks. They haven't said any kind of number on this in terms of when he's expected to be back. Maybe I've missed it, but I haven't seen anything of that nature. For the time being, I think d'Arnaud is a really solid pickup. Catcher sucks a lot of the time. There's a lot of shitty catchers. I know it's deeper than it used to be, but it's still not great, especially in two-catcher formats. If you're seeing Travis d'Arnaud sitting out there in any two-catcher leagues, I think he's an absolute must-roster player. And even in 12-team leagues where it's just one catcher, 12, 15-team, one-catcher leagues, you could probably do worse. A guy in the middle of the Braves lineup right now who's on a little bit of a heater. Again, it's not a rest-of-season type of play. But if you're really struggling with your catcher's been disappointing you, maybe you took a chance on Henry Davis or something, and you're still sitting there and d'Arnaud's a free agent, I would make that switch pretty happily. Not just for Davis, but for several players. I think d'Arnaud at this point in time is probably a top 15 catcher. I think he's almost definitely a top 15 catcher until Sean Murphy comes back. Let's talk about Ahmed Rosario. He's been fantastic. He's batting .351, couple homers, three steals, eligibility all over the place, second, short, in the outfield. An absolute must-roster player as well at this point. And another thing that I just noticed right now, as they've released the lineup for today, he's leading off. He's leading off of the Rays. He has been batting fifth, sixth. He batted third once, middle of the order, sometimes at the bottom. Not even at the bottom, but like seven range. He's bounced around. They're leading him off today. That's huge. If that is anything that's able to stick on even a semi-permanent basis, I don't know how often this is going to be something we see, but maybe they put him in the leadoff spot on a regular basis. I don't know. Either way, he's producing. Triple eligible guy producing for a good lineup who's now potentially a leadoff guy. Ahmed Rosario is definitely worth a pickup. Reed Garrett is somebody that's very interesting as well. I see a lot of smart people talking about how excellent he is below the surface. And the problem is, he's not losing the job, he's not displacing Edwin Diaz out of his job. If this was on a team like Minnesota, maybe Texas, a few other opportunities around baseball, maybe the White Sox, Colorado, then there's a decent chance he'd already be the closer. But when you have Edwin Diaz in front of you, I don't really see you displacing him unless there's an injury here. Or unless Diaz blows literally 10 consecutive saves, maybe they would go out of their way there. But Diaz has a massive contract. He's trusted. He's considered one of the best closers in all the league. So I see some people thinking maybe we can get Garrett there taken over. I would be shocked. Diaz has been great. To displace him would take a hell of a lot. Now, you can make the argument, and I think it's a decent enough argument, that Reed Garrett is still worth rostering in a lot of cases. Every year I've done this show, there's been a couple of relievers that pop up that you're not expecting to really have a lot of value. Tyler Holton was that guy last year. Most of you guys are probably thinking, who the hell is Tyler Holton? Go put his numbers into Fangraphs and go see what he did for you last year. He wasn't a guy who was going to give you a hell of a lot of really anything in particular, but 85 and a third innings of a 2.11 ERA and a .87 whip. He struck out 74 batters in 85 innings. He had three wins. He had one save. A lot of people are like, what the hell is that? I don't care about that. 85 innings of a 2.11 ERA, that's half a starting pitcher right there, half of an elite starting pitcher. What starting pitcher is giving you, what, 150, 160? If you're getting half of that at an elite level from Reed Garrett, I think that, in retrospect, maybe not at the time, you might think, I don't need this, I don't need this, whatever. But Reed Garrett versus the average streamer is an interesting conversation. And I think I'd lean more towards Reed Garrett than you're picking up, Bryce Elder, or you're picking up the guy from Baltimore, Albert Suarez, who has one good start in his, 32 years old. He has one good start, or 34 years old, one good start. People, picking him up all over the place. Keaton Wynn, who's all right, but I don't know if I'm fully sold for this year. Ryan Weathers, who's a converted reliever, who we don't know if that's going to stick or not. There's a lot of questions about streamers, just for today's streamers, let alone for over the course of an entire season. Reed Garrett is somebody where the numbers under the surface are really good. The stuff is incredible. I think that he is worth slotting into a lot of lineups. It might feel weird to do so, but most weeks, if you're going back and forth about a potential streamer, it's because there's something there that's not perfect about that streamer. There's something that's not great about them. It's like, should I not do it? When you're having that conversation with yourself about should I or should I not, usually the answer is no, regardless of what you're talking about in life, but specifically for streamers. If you are able to slot a reliever in like Reed Garrett, who on a given week, like what he did last week is probably not going to happen every single week, but 4 innings, 2 wins, 1 save, 10 strikeouts, and a 0 ERA. It's not going to happen like that every week, but if you're getting those kinds of weeks from him, even if it's on a semi-regular basis where he's given up maybe the odd earned run, I think there's a lot of value there. So I think that Reed Garrett is somebody to be taken a look at if you can find him. And I mean, you can find him. He's 18% rostered. Not somebody who's gotten a hell of a lot of buzz. Although, as I say that, nearly 10,000 ads today on Yahoo. So I shouldn't be taken away from him. 8,300 by the time that all's said and done. We're likely looking at more than 10,000 ads. But I think that there is reason to be kind of optimistic there. Mitchell Parker, we've talked about him a lot. But yes, he is among the most popular ads today as well. And then we will also talk about Mr. Dalton Varsho. Welcome back, Mr. Dalton Varsho, after being dropped universally in the first week of the season because you have a bad week. Now, over the last 2 weeks, you're the number 8th ranked player. So that just... I'm not trying to single out anybody because I've done it myself. You drop a player. I dropped Esteri Ruiz in a couple and the one league where I had him, and then he comes back up and he's hitting home runs and you're feeling like an idiot. It does happen. With Varsho, it was a really bad call to drop him so early. A guy gets demoted in Ruiz, it's a different story. With Varsho, he struggled a bit out of the gate. He had a couple of bad games. It was really overblown. Now he is looking like what Toronto paid for. Defensively, he's been amazing in the outfield. He should be playing every single day, and I think that's something that, early on when he was struggling, they sat him a few times. He wasn't necessarily considered an everyday player in Toronto. That's something that I think is changing very rapidly. Dalton Varsho, if he's ever sitting these days, it would be a big surprise based on how he's been performing on both sides of the ball. He's hitting home runs. He's stealing bases. He's playing well in the outfield. And he's only 58% rostered because still there are a lot of people that just said to hell with him. It's a bad start, so it's going to be bad always. I don't understand that thought process. It's still so early. It's 20 games into the season. Julio Rodriguez right now would technically, if you're just looking at the numbers, be a drop in a lot of people's eyes. You have to just give these guys with a track record more time. And yes, Varsho did struggle a bit last season. He did. But that was still 20 homers and 16 steals. To give up on a guy like that so early, it just really never made much sense to me. So Varsho, if he's out there, I would be picking him up. Let's talk about the drops. Number one is Frankie Montas. He's likely to miss his next start. He took a line driver off of his elbow, forearm area. Brutal, brutal luck from Frankie Montas. It hadn't been amazing before that. He had a good start against Philly and a good start against Washington, followed by a bad start against Milwaukee and then a terrible one against Seattle. I think most of you guys in 10-teamers are probably pretty all right to be sending him back to the waiver wire. He said he's likely to miss his next start. I don't know what this is going to look like. It's not your typical forearm injury, obviously, where they're usually like a stress injury from overuse or overthrowing, whatever. This is a contact injury where he actually gets a ball right off of it. I'm not sure what the actual diagnosis is. They're just saying it's a sore forearm at this point or a bruise on his forearm. But I think in most cases, you're pretty okay to be letting him go to the waiver wire. This was a brutal, brutal update to get for somebody who rosters him quite a bit. But Albert Alzolay is currently not the closer in Chicago. I think it's a little bit premature for them to do this. But he is currently not the club's closer. And this is right from the manager's mouth himself, Craig Counsell. He blew his second straight save. He's blown 4 saves this year. So I do understand it. He still hasn't been that terrible. He's got the 3 saves. The ERA with that couple of blown saves is only at 4. The options around him are not exactly amazing. And Counsell didn't indicate one way or another what's going to happen here. If it's going to be Mark Leiter, if it's going to be Hector Neris, This is another one of those situations, honestly, and I know I've said this a few times now, but I just don't care. And I don't want to bother with this revolving door of sharing saves between three different players on a team that's only probably going to have 35 saves, 40 saves maybe, to divvy up anyway. Texas is an example that I was kind of in that boat on, but now they're clearly going to Kirby Yates. And it's less of a question on a day-to-day basis who it's going to be. Milwaukee is the ultimate cluster F. I might as well have just said the word for all that it matters. It's a shit show in Milwaukee. I have no idea who they're going to turn to on any given day. I wouldn't be bothering with any of them. And then somebody will say, no, but Piamps, but Piamps, but Uribe, but McGill, but this guy, but that guy. I don't have any idea. And that's the way we're heading down here in Chicago. I saw a lot of people talking, and again, what the hell do we know on Twitter anyway? But a lot of people saying, no, it's Leiter. And then the other half people saying, no, it's Norris. And then there's also people saying, it'll be Alzolay again next week. So there's no need to do anything. It's just a situation where unless you're really desperate for saves, I wouldn't be bothering here. Like, my home league, I took the cheap closer route where I was like, okay, I'll just draft the cheap guys and maybe I'll hit on a few. And it was like Griffin Jacks, Alzolay, Leclerc, brutal stuff. But they've been cut. They've been replaced. And I don't think you need to be replacing them. I mean, I haven't cut Alzolay yet, to be fair. But those other guys have been cut and replaced with the likes of Kirby Yates. And who was the other guy I picked up? It was a shallow league, so I picked up Jose Alvarado in that one. It's a 10-teamer, my home league. But generally speaking, you don't need to worry about closer committees in shallow formats. It's the best way to go bald and give yourself gray hair. I can tell you that as somebody who's already going bald in my mid-20s. It's because of speculating on closers. In large part, probably, and I say that as a joke, but only partially as a joke because it is truly just a huge pain in the ass, especially if you're dropping fab. If you're just like, you know, free-for-all pickup system like I have in my home league where there's no waivers, no nothing, which is kind of fun, but it's also crazy. It's a little different. It's not actually setting me back. Like, yes, there are a specific number of ads for the week, but if you're paying $50-$70 every week on the next closer for Milwaukee, you're going to be out of fab pretty soon, and you're going to have very few saves to show for it. I think it's the same kind of situation with Chicago. My guess would be that Alzolay would eventually get back into the role, but we'll see what happens, right? For now, I think he's probably a hold in most cases. He's not currently the closer, so if that makes you want to cut him right away, then I could get behind it. I'm not at the point where he's like a must drop because I do think that he will eventually get back, and I don't think it'll take a terribly long time either. Norris is good, but last year he had a good surface year, and then if you know, dug a little deeper, it was not that great. Leiter is kind of an unproven guy still in a closer role. I don't know how that would work out. Alzolay has the experience. He was very good last year, and I do think that he eventually will get this job back. So if you want to play closer of the day, then by all means, for me personally, it's just not worth it. It's really, really not worth the hassle. It doesn't usually end up paying off anyway. Martin Perez dropped quite a bit today. He had a bad start, allowed 4 in runs, 6 hits over 4 innings. He did strike out 7, and the strikeouts have actually been not bad for Martin Perez. I mean, they're still not great, 23 of them in 28 innings, but he had 93 strikeouts in 142 innings last year. So it's like any increase there is pretty good. I would say that he's probably not somebody I'd be just fully cutting because of a pretty decent matchup this week against the Giants. That would be a situation where I'd probably be starting him. He's not a must-hold, though, guy. Like, if he's a 10-team league and you're holding him there, I don't think that that's a situation where you have to start him. Like, there's one 15-team league where I have him. That's a very, very good pitching staff, mind you, but I'm not starting him in one 15-teamer. I'm starting him in a couple of 15s and a 12-teamer, and I can get behind it in a lot of cases. It just depends on your options. But again, it really, really does just depend on who else is available there for starts. But I think that Martin Perez, generally speaking, I mean, 3.45 ERA is really good. The whip has been kind of shit at 1.43. But a good matchup there against San Francisco, I could see him being a pretty viable streamer. Specifically, though, more for the deeper leagues. I don't think in a 10-team league, Martin Perez really cuts it. And if you're not going to use him against a pretty good matchup in a given week, there's probably no real need for him to be on your roster. Louis Varland got sent down to AAA today. And yes, this one is a brutal one. As somebody who was fairly in on him in spring, it's been awful. Now, he hasn't been done any favors really by the schedule. He faced Milwaukee earlier in the year, and then he got the Dodgers, and then Baltimore. Detroit, it's hard to make excuses against Detroit. It's just been bad. There's no need to hold Varland in any format whatsoever. He's got an ERA well over 9. The whip is well over 2. Just not good stuff. He's in the minors. You can very easily be sending him back to the waiver wire. Seth Lugo is an interesting drop today. I think it's a little premature. He's been really good. Good starts against Minnie, against the White Sox twice, and against Houston. He does pretty well against the White Sox until eventually, you know, they did come back to bite him in the third inning there, give up 4 runs, back-to-back homers to Kowser and Westberg. And it was a bad start, right? Not a lot of strikeouts, but he's still at a 2.03 ERA, 1.19 whip for the year. I think it's a little premature to cut bait with Seth Lugo at this point. I'm not a huge fan, but he is a guy who can eat a good number of innings and usually just provide good ratios for you. Strikeouts last year were actually not bad either. They've fallen off a cliff this year. But 140 of them last year in 146 innings, he can be close to a strikeout per inning guy. I don't think this is just who he is now, that he's going to have no strikeouts or strike out a guy like, you know, 4 or 5 K per 9 type of guy. Like, it's not quite that bad. The strikeouts are not going to be an asset. Don't get me wrong. But I do think that he is, generally speaking, still a guy that should be rostered in most cases. 62%, it's probably about right, but it does feel a little bit light at the same time. You could probably replace your worst pitcher with Lugo at this point, and it's not going to be hurting you. I think that he is a pretty solid asset that shouldn't be available in too many cases. But guys, that will do it for us today. I really appreciate everybody kicking off their week with us. If you are still here, like I mentioned earlier, not everybody listens to a whole podcast, but if you still are, ratings and reviews really do help the show to grow, be seen by more people, and that is always the goal here. To expand our audience, that is always something that we are looking to do, and you guys can help out with that by just taking a couple seconds and leaving a rating and review. Guys, JoelRico99 over on Twitter, EthosFantasyBB as well, and also the sportsethos.com website for everything right from the source. We will be back again tomorrow, but until then, take care. Have a great night.